so I had to explain to a 19-year-old what a money order was. And he's just super confused because he's like, why can't we just use cash? And I'm like,
yeah, it's stupid.
Yeah. And then I'm like, well, you fill it out like a check. And he just looks at me like I'm a fucking idiot. And I'm like, okay.
It's a check.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, can't I just put my phone up to something and have it taken care of? All right, well, here we go. This is, what episode is it? What epi are we on? We're on 253.
Oh.
Looking out for shit. That's Scott. I'm Ryan. We're comic book artists. We work on Justice League versus Legion of Superheroes at DC Comics. Issue 5 should be out in the next few weeks, I imagine. This is a podcast we've done for roughly 270-something episodes.
Years.
You can become up, feels like epochs. Become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/super75studios to support this podcast. You get early video versions of each podcast plus other stuff. Everything else is available at tigshow.com, including merch, all the episodes, all the good stuff. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at TIG_show. Scott also has a Patreon, patreon.com/scottygod. And right now, if you go to jeffmart.com, GEOFFMART.com, Scott has some new artist proofs. That's what they're called, right? Like original art, but when digital guys do it.
Yeah, I wonder why they call them that.
Well, because technically it's still original art, so there needs to be a better term, I suppose. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like whoever started doing them for the first time named them, and then everyone else just bandwagoned it.
Well, that's how naming like, things works.
Like, I know what an artist proof is, but an artist proof is normally you have, say you get 100 prints of something, you might get 5 artist proofs that you keep for yourself. So the term artist proof is something you keep for yourself when you sell copies of the work. So a one-of-one artist proof is probably a little misnamed, but... Artist exclusive artwork. But yes, go to jeffmart.com. Again, spelled like the Toys R Us Jeff. Like or the John. Yeah, the giraffe or the Johns. jeffmart.com. So buy it. Make Scott happy. So I see a smiling face under all that luscious beard hair. You got a vitamin water in front of you, buddy?
No, I got to buy...
And you're on. We need to get sponsored. Bye.
They're just around. That's what's around.
Yeah. Well, when you live in my house, beer is around. So I have a beer today. And I thought I was going to have to drink a Hams. I thought I was going to have to let everyone down and just drink yet another Hams because I bought a case in Lawrence, Kansas. But I forgot that I had a craft beer in my work fridge. So I have a Mike Hess Brewing Company Into the Sunset Blood Orange IPA, 6.5%, out of San Diego, California. It's very blood orangey, but it's more Mandarin than anything else, and it looks flat as hell now that I've poured it into my Moab Brewing pint glass. 3.67 out of 5 on Untappd. And okay. Garfunkelo T says... tastes like orange pollen.
What?
And he gave it a 3.75 out of 5.
Orange pollen? The fuck does pollen taste like?
I don't know, but the phrase tastes like orange pollen would make me think you'd give it like a 1.5 out of 5. He still gave it a 3.75 out of 5. It smells like an IPA.
I don't know what pollen tastes like. Dust? Grass? I don't know.
Chalk? So, yes, I'm going to try this today. We'll see how it goes. What have you been watching, man? We didn't have a show last week because I was gone traveling.
Yeah.
So you've had 2 weeks to prepare episode 253's TikTok segment, which I assume every night you're writing in your diary. And
yeah. What have I been watching? I think I'm almost finished with the first season of True Detective through 6 episodes, 7. I don't know how many there are.
I think there's only 8.
Okay.
Might be 10. I'm not quite sure.
I hope it's 8. It's fine. I think it was probably overhyped.
I think the pilot is one of the best pilots I've ever seen. And then, yeah,
I don't know. You're watching it for McConaughey and Harrelson's performances. That's mm-hmm. really what's compelling about it. Otherwise, it's kind of just SVU, but on HBO.
Any more acronyms?
No. What else have I watched? Nothing, I don't think. I can't think of any movies. No, I haven't really consumed a whole lot.
Yeah, same with me. I did just watch their 30-minute episode. So while I was putting together a bookshelf behind me, we ran through The Bear on Hulu. It's an FX show, but we watch it on Hulu.
Yeah.
Like I said, 30-minute episode. So it was actually – I was getting like super frustrated and pissed off because I was like every time an episode ended, I was still putting the damn bookshelf together. And I was like, it's taking me 3 hours to put this bookshelf together. And then I realized it's only 30-minute episodes. So this bookshelf, if you get a bookshelf similar to the one I have, it's a 6 episodes of The Bear. And it is a bear to put together. Like, it comes with like 39 screws and dowels. And, you know, I got these sausage fingers. So when I use the little hex tool they give you, it just falls out of my hand and like it drops every 10 seconds. It's stripping, you know, every like, you know, I got to keep going back and finding one. Nightmare.
That's spurred something in my brain. I did watch Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, okay.
That was very good. When yes. you said sausage fingers, it reminded me of that.
Yes. That's my wife, who I tend to think, I mean, just because she has like 5.5 more degrees than I have doesn't mean she's smarter than me. But when she thought sausage fingers was absolutely hilarious, it's when I finally gave full credit to sausage fingers, because I thought they overplayed it. I thought it was a little too much. It went into Thor Ragnarok territory of silliness.
I don't agree,
but it played off. Yeah, I still think it might be the best movie I've seen this year. But
do you feel the same way about Raccoonie?
Raccoonie.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Ratatouille. That I don't care about any of that. I never watched the movie. It's all silly. Like,
you don't think they overplayed the bit though?
They probably did. That's not as memorable to me as Jamie Lee Curtis and Michelle Yeoh like rubbing each other's faces with hot dog fingers. I don't know why. I don't know why I remember women with sausage fingers on, you know, more than the Raccoonie. Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's still so far my favorite movie of the year, but because I have not seen either Nope or Top Gun Maverick, which I think...
I haven't seen either. I do want to see one of them.
Top Gun Maverick in IMAX? Because it's theatrical run, can't last for much longer. I'm going to have to go see it.
That's 4D
Ultra IMAX. So yeah, The Bear on Hulu. It's pretty good. It's a... set in a kitchen, so I like cooking shows. So it's kind of set in that. It's super. If I was telling Gonzo, like, if you've ever worked in a kitchen or you're easily triggered by anxiety-inducing shows, then it might not be the show for you, because the entire first episode is just 30 minutes of anxiety and stress, and it was a bit much.
So is it like all about the restaurant?
Well, it's about the people in the restaurant.
Right. But it takes place like at the restaurant.
Yeah. Like the premise of it is a guy is working in the best kitchens in the world. And then his brother passes and leaves him their family's restaurant in Chicago. And it's just like a hot beef sandwich restaurant. It's not a fine dining restaurant. So he has to go and run this restaurant that he's used to running, like, you know, tip top restaurants. And now he has to go run this mom and pop shit that's fallen apart and dealing with, you know, people that, you know, he's used to dealing with high level elite chefs who are trained, and he has to go and work with these, like, so it's kind of him getting his comeuppance, but also he's trying to raise the level of cooking and this, but it's all interpersonal relationships and shit like that. And it might go down in history as the most fucks I've ever heard on basic cable. Like, I know they can say it on basic cable now. I mean, it's been years where you've been able to say it, but there are scenes where the F word is said every, like, you know, like four times and like out of six words. So I recommend it though. It was good. I liked it. But like I said, it could trigger other people. You know what I'm saying?
It's on my list. I've heard good things about it elsewhere.
Yes. And I don't know the actor because I've never watched Shameless, but apparently he was on Shameless for like seven years. I don't know him either. But I also like because he's short. They make short jokes. He's short and powerful, which I obviously, you know, I'm familiar with.
Right. I was going to say aspire to be.
Oh. Wait, you don't think I'm short? Thanks. Nice. Also, last note, Premier League starts up this weekend. So if listener does not like our premier, our weekly recaps,
tough
shit, pal.
That's right.
Yeah. 9:30 AM for me on Saturday. Time to gear up and watch my team get blown out by Chelsea. who do the Gunners play in week one?
Crystal Palace.
Well, not quite a layup. Crystal Palace was good.
Yeah, they're middle of the table.
Yeah, it's hard to take them seriously with that name. They're like the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I kind of like it. I like
really?
Crystal Palace. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's interesting.
That's some basic ass shit, but that's okay.
I guess
it is interesting. It is interesting. I mean, what's the history? Were they founded by
Manchester City? Is basic as shit.
Yeah, I guess so. But I like the traditional basic shit. Crystal Palace just seems like some rich guy got drunk one night and just named the team.
Yeah, in my head, I see like Fabergé eggs or something.
Yeah, like a Rasputin started the Crystal Palace FC. Yeah, so that's it. Do I have something else in Rex on TV shows? No, but everything else I'll save for Rex. So that's it for my TikTok segment. Personally, I can't speak for you. I wouldn't dare.
No.
All right.
No. Yeah. Tomorrow noon.
What happened?
That's it. That's it. Move on.
You're
Gunners in Palace tomorrow.
Oh, at noon on Friday?
Yep. They kick off the season.
Ooh. And is it on a channel you can watch it on?
I don't know. Probably not, since it's the only game on Friday to start the season. It's probably not on Peacock.
Yeah, I should give you my Hulu password so you can watch USA and stuff, but I just gave it to my kid. I don't know how many people you can share that with. But I like you more than I like my other kids, so maybe I'll give it to you. Just kidding. Oh, and speaking of kids, shout out to I love all three of my kids. Shout out to my oldest kid. It's his birthday today. So 24. I own a 24-year-old.
Wow.
Well, I guess I owned him for 18 years. Now he's kind of like on his own, secondhand. But
24.
Yeah. 24.
Well, happy birthday, oldest kid.
Yeah, happy birthday, kid. All right. And I do love my middle kid that I just made the joke about. Not that he's a listener, but you never know. You know, what if I died tomorrow and they just
maybe if they became a patron, you'd love them more.
Of course I would. Was dollars going to fucking kill him? Like, I haven't given him money in the past. Today's topic, you've been lighting up your Twitter with all these artsy fartsy questions. So I thought let's have an artsy fartsy kind of discussion. I just chose three simple things: style, technique, and tools. And I even got definitions via Google.
Ooh, what does Google say?
Well, we'll get to them in due time. So, style, technique, and tools. My note is: some guys use all three to great. The best artists use all three of these to great effect. Some guys have great style, but might be questionable in the technical abilities or the draftsmanship. Other guys have all the fancy tools in the world and still struggle with basic technique or basic style, you know, and then you can lean heavily on one of these three to kind of hide your deficiencies in the other categories. Like, I think Liefeld is a good example of a guy who has like overwhelming style, but maybe lacks in the technical ability. But who am I to say, because I love Liefeld shit. So style's good for me. Yeah, so style, a particular manner or technique by which something is done, created, or performed.
Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines style as...
a particular manner or technique by which something is done, created, or performed. I think of style as the first thing you see when you look at a page. If you open up a page or if you're on someone's Instagram or whatever, the first thing that jumps out is style or lack of style before you get to any effect.
A few weeks ago, I think Pete Woods posted some quote about style that I don't remember, but it made me think of something I read in Wizard that I think was attributed to Neil Adams, where he said style is everything you do wrong. Which
maybe because, well, I guess
I think there's some truth to that. But I think it's more along the lines of style is in previous episodes, we've talked a lot about knowing the rules before you can break the rules. And I think style is breaking those rules in your way.
Yeah, that's a good way. I was thinking style is what happens maybe when you combine the tools at your disposal and technique. What then comes out of all that might be your style. And I think you can learn technique, and I think you can learn to use all the programs and all the tools in the world. But style is something you develop, because if you actively try to learn a style, then you're aping a style. So style is something that should come out naturally. And, you know, the guys that I really like, or, you know, grew up liking, the Image guys, a lot of those guys, at first glance, you couldn't tell that they were aping anybody. It was like a brand new smack to the face. Like Jim Lee, to me, was brand new. And obviously, if you go back to Jim Lee's earliest stuff, you know, he calls back to like John Byrne and some of those other guys. But by the time he was on like Punisher War Journal and shit, that was Jim Lee. That was his style taking root and growing. Same with like Liefeld. Maybe if you look back at Liefeld, you could see certain influences in his very earliest work. But when I think of style,
manga energy to it.
Yeah, I think the guys who come out of the gate with something brand new and unique, which Sean Gordon Murphy, when he started out, that was a style that kind of was like, oh shit, this is new and fresh, and it's not that common. It's not that common to have guys come out like that. More guys come out looking like the people they admired, and then they develop their style over years. And maybe it's just with the internet now, you see people progress from day one, you know, from their very first published work. They could post on Instagram. So style is easy to see it develop now, easier to see.
Sure. Yeah. It's like a personality, right? I mean, you are the sum of every person you've ever met and every experience you've ever had. And it's the same way with your art style. It's just it is the culmination of all of your influences plus just your own innate sensibilities when it comes to that stuff. So I dug out some old sketchbooks, and I mean, there's heavy Sean Murphy periods, and there's heavy Mike Mignola periods, and there's it all goes into the pot, and eventually it should come out, you know, as something else. You know, you shove all of those things into the transporter and you turn it on, and you know, on the other end you get a mutant art style.
You get a Brundle Godlewski. And I think style is something that these other two things we're talking about today, technique and tools, those you use those things to get to the style you want to get to. So you take in other artists, you take in what they do well, and to try to emulate and put that into your work, then you use the other two kind of categories we're talking about. But like I said, I think of style, I think of like Jim Lee, Liefeld, Mignola was definitely doing stuff, especially when he was reaching like his peak, or what I believe was his peak. You know, he's doing stuff no one else was doing. If I can like see a comic book cover from 10 feet away and know who drew it, that's style. You know, you can spot a Mignola cover from anywhere.
Sure.
And I think style might be the strongest of these three that we're talking about, as far as some guys have entire careers just with good style. They could be detrimental in technique, and they could basically use the same tools people were using 100 years ago to draw comics. And if their style is good enough and eye-catching enough, they're going to find work. And I think this is the thing where a lot of people, you know the rules before you break the rules, or that kind of thing. A lot of people focus so much on style that, especially younger people coming up or people trying to break in, I think they focus so much on style and what they want their book to look like, then they can ignore the other aspects. And maybe that's why they're still struggling. Or like, even maybe me, the reason I never really took off as a penciler or inker is maybe like I didn't put enough effort into technique, and I just want to draw like Bruce Timm or Darwin Cook. And I don't put in my monkey at the typewriter hours, I think, to earn the style.
I don't know. And I don't know. I feel like style probably isn't as big a deal as we think it is.
I don't think it is for comic book readers. I think it is for other artists. Like, you know, whenever they say a guy's an artist's artist, he probably is a three-tool player, but you think of their style first. Like, when I think of Stelfreeze, an artist's artist, I don't think of how technically proficient Stelfreeze is. I think of what a Stelfreeze drawing looks like, and to me, that's style, and everything informs that style. Whereas there's a lot of guys who might draw like a James Heron right now, and I can't remember their names. I just look at that, and I'm like, oh, they're trying to draw like James Heron. You know, Stelfreeze is unique. Mignola is unique, even though a bunch of dudes try to draw like Mignola. Those guys, their work is unique, and I think that's because of the style, which, again, I think encompasses everything. So if you lack in technique, I think it shows up in your style. And if you're technically proficient, I think it shows up in your style.
What's technique?
A way of carrying out a particular task, especially the execution or performance of an artistic work or a scientific procedure.
Mm.
So like, if I want to draw like Jim Lee, I need to learn how to do all those hatching, and I need to understand the anatomy so that I can then fudge the anatomy, or, you know, so I can, you know, Jim Lee, I mean, I think he does a lot of hatching, and a lot of those image guys got a lot of play off of that, like overworking the figure, almost over rendering the figure. But there's still something to it, like the cheekbone shading, the way the muscles land, the way the arm bends and shit like that. Like, a lot of those guys, while they may exaggerate the anatomy for superhero comics, the fundamentals of their anatomical knowledge is there. But like, yeah, in my mind, so my example of a technical artist would be Kevin Nolan. He's a guy who uses his style and his technique to improve and enhance other artists when he's inking. So he's not forcing his style on them. He's just so technically proficient that his style, I think, just naturally bends other people's work to his aesthetic, I guess. I don't know. This one's kind of tough.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess, like, just execution is style.
Yeah, like, technique would be do your layouts, build your figures, do your understand what size you're drawing for, you know, like, you know, when I first started working digitally, even now, I guess, you know, I zoom in too much. And then when the page is printed, it can be muddy if you have too many details. That's a technical skill, is knowing what it's going to reproduce at, what it's going to look like when you're done drawing it, what it's going to print at, as opposed to, let me just get in and noodle all this shit, because then it just looks muddy as shit, you know, like all of that, I think, is technique. Like,
I suppose.
When to throw down a Conte crayon, or a fucking when to use your dry brush instead of your number two Winsor Newton, or that's all technique. Like, knowing what you want something to look at and having the technical skills to achieve that. And you mentioned in a tweet last week or whatever, like, using the shortcuts that are available to us because we work digitally. That's all technique, because, I mean, I'm not quite sure what I want something to look at like, but I know what I don't want it to look like. So when I'm rendering texture, I'll try like 30 different brushes till I find the one that works. And then it'll end up looking how I want it to look. And I think that's technique. Cause I have an idea of what I want it to look for. I just need to figure out how to get it there.
Yeah. I can see that. That's maybe I'll talk about that on the Twitter at some point too, was the digital toolbox and how to keep it from getting too large and cumbersome.
Yeah. Like I was doing this before I started, coloring the Justice League book. I was doing a page a week on my Patreon and I was just going nuts with all the brushes and just dropping in quick backgrounds and throwing up texture upon texture upon texture. And, as I think about going back and finishing that book and then eventually printing it up for like conventions and stuff, I'm going to have to go, I want to go back through all those pages and just pare it down. Like, I think I was just going crazy. Like, cause in my mind, like, let me fuck around with this brush on something that I'm doing for myself. And then if it's a good one, I'll put it in my toolbox, my go-to brush set, you know?
Yeah.
It's fun to fuck around, but it also, you can get in the weeds real quick and you can take shortcuts real quick with that. So, again, I think that falls under technique, knowing when to pull back, knowing when to let loose, all that kind of shit.
Yeah, I think that was the spirit of the question I was asking on Twitter about. And I choose that word carefully, right? Is it right to make marks digitally that you couldn't make traditionally? Like if it's an ethics question.
Yeah, but I don't remember who said it. But someone replied to you, and it would be the same thing as like doing endoscopic surgery now. They said something about like using the most the best technology for the job. And I was thinking about that. Like in the old days, they would have to cut your stomach open, rip out your gallbladder, sew it up, blah, blah, blah. Now, something you can never do by hand, they can be guided by like a digital viewer, and they can go in through your belly button and pull out your gallbladder without leaving a scar, without like invasive surgery. Like that can't be done by hand. You know, that needs the medical technology that advanced. You're still accomplishing the same job just with less damage. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Also, what's the point of, especially in Photoshop, I can adjust how, you know, if I have a grass brush, I can tweak it so that it doesn't look like a repetitive brush. It switch axes, it can switch opacity a little bit, it can do all sorts of things. So if I can do that and take 30 seconds laying down a bed of grass, why would I want to spend hours making each individual grass mark? I mean, I could do it.
No, you don't need to argue with me. I get it.
Someone does.
Like I am on board. I agree.
Oh, see, when you post that,
I think it might be a little bit like fonts and graphic design, right? I don't know what the rule is, but generally you don't choose more than like two or three to go within the same piece. I think that might be the same sort of thing.
Yeah. And when I was talking a minute ago about like, I was going overboard on those pages, it would be that like I would fall in for three pages, I would fall in love with a certain hatch brush. And then I would just inexplicably like switch it up to like a thumbprint brush for trying to achieve the same sort of texture shading. And that's the kind of thing. I think you're right. Like restraint is good, I think, in storytelling. Because otherwise you get a lot of the movies that you and I complain about on the show or whatever, is that there's no box for them to fit in and tell the best story within these limitations. And I think it goes the same way with comics. Like the page is our limitation these days, but that's it. Because printing now, they can print almost anything. So you're really only constrained to size now. But the more shit you put in the cake doesn't make the cake better.
Right. And you hopefully have some intuitive sense at some point of what's working and what's not. So you would hope your eyes can say, oh, well, this is just, we've gone over the line here and now it's just a mess.
Yeah. And that's what it becomes. Like, you can have a, to do a callback, because I'm a professional, you can have a stylish looking drawing that was pushed too far. And sometimes that's what makes it a cool, like, pinup or something like that, you know, but that doesn't necessarily translate to good storytelling. Having, you know, pushing those boundaries too far or going, like, there's comic book artists where I like their covers, right? But I don't want to read, I don't want to see sequentials in that by that artist, because it's just, it's too much. There's too much shit going on. Mm. You know, Stephen Platt, fucking, I don't know. There's someone I want to name, but I'm sure some art guy out there would fucking scream at me for calling somebody out, so I won't. But there's definitely certain guys that I can appreciate that they're very talented draftsmen and very talented artists, and I don't want to read a fucking 4-panel page or 6-panel page of theirs telling a story sequentially. So I think all of that, I think, goes into technique, knowing when to pull back, knowing when to leave room, even shit like leaving room for speech balloons. That's technique. You know, you learn that, you know, the book that we're on right now, there's a lot of speech bubbles, and part of your education that you've learned creating comics, you know, drawing figures small enough to leave enough space for word balloons, that's not style. That's technique. That's understanding. That's a technical aspect of your job. There's going to be this amount of words in here, so I have to draw the character this way or on this side of the panel or, you know, in the foreground or in the background, and who's next to who and who's speaking. That's all technical work. That's not style. And I think some people might struggle with that because especially people trying to break in, their first kind of thought is every panel's got to be like the coolest fucking panel ever. And it's just not, it's not feasible. And I don't think it's the best idea when you're telling a story sequentially. Sometimes you have to pull back to let the other aspects of the comic shine.
Yeah. And there's context for everything, right? I mean, a superhero story panel should probably generally be more exciting than a love comic story panel.
Love comics.
Or even like a crime comic or something.
Right. Yeah, we've talked about that too, about panel layout, depending on genre and stuff like that. But again, even that, how do I lay out this comic as opposed to this comic? I think it's a technical decision. This is a crime comic. This is a superhero comic. This is a fucking kids comic, you know? All of how the book is laid out and drawn, style is a part of it, but the beginning of it, it's a technical decision. And if it's not, the book might not play the same way. It might not read the same way. You know, like, I don't read a lot of like young adult graphic novels, but I'd be shocked if a lot of them had like overhead shots, fucking worm's eye view shots, you know, fucking extreme force perspective shots. Like there's probably not a lot of that in those comics, in those Scholastic comics.
Yeah. I did a really rudimentary Google search the other day for the language of comics for, you know, even film or language of film. It's like this means this and that means that sort of thing. And, I didn't dig very far, so I didn't find a whole lot, but I would like to just collect that information just for myself, maybe just to have some sort of like bullshit, like rule book that you can fall back on when your brain is just jelly.
Yeah. Like you know, going back to the Wally Woods 22 panels that always work, that's a good way to just sort of jumpstart an idea for a panel. I saw just on Twitter today, someone posted like the 9 rules of a Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner cartoon that Chuck Jones wrote out. It's like these are 9 things. These are 9 basically tenets to make your decision making when writing this episode of this cartoon. And again, I think that goes back to creativity thrives within boundaries. And I think only the cream, the very best can create seminal works without any boundaries. Because I think it's too easy to just, oh, I want to fucking have dragons now, or I want to have fucking like, you know, dragons with lasers. And like, maybe that makes sense, but you're also like, it's a love story, you know? So maybe a dragon with a laser doesn't quite fit into this story today.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's, there's for most things, there's a system and a set of rules, and it may not appear that way, but that's just how stuff works, so that you're able to get stuff done. I was thinking about adding to my little motivational list of shit that I keep around, that to limit yourself, because, you know, those restraints, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And so rules force you to be creative is what the fuck I'm talking about.
Yes. I feel like that's exactly what I just said.
So, I think it would be beneficial for me and maybe for a lot of people to collect those things. And I would like to cut down on decision-making in my process, because it's exhausting. So anytime I can defer to something else, it will. So if I have where, you know, I guess you got to break it down into what the goal of it is or something. I don't know. Like this panel is supposed to be tense or something. And so I have this list here of angles and panel sizes or shapes or whatever that convey that feeling of tension. Okay. So I need to just pick one of those combinations.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Like, like if I need to show, I don't know. Maybe it is a shortcut of mine, but when like, I need to show like someone, like I'm a big fan of like eyebrows and shit. So I do a lot of close-ups if something's tense or if someone's, you know, maybe it comes from manga, like where the big eyes and whatever, but like, yeah, tense situations or anger situations, I tend to go in close and, you know, I tend to, my personal thing, and I've other people do it way better than me, is that sort of like, claustrophobia creates tension. So like a fight scene, I think it's good to have fight scenes where you can see everything, but I also think it's good. Like if someone's gouging an eye out or whatever, I want the thumb in the eye. I don't need to see the rest of that. You know, someone's getting their face scratched, you know, I focus on the fingernails and the guy's face who's getting scratched. And to me, that creates tension just because it's super confined, super constrained. But again, maybe that's just me being lazy. I don't want to draw the whole panel. Who knows?
Yeah. You just want something big in the front.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would like that. I mean, it's like a football playbook. I've got a set of plays for second and short in my own territory. And then I've got another set of plays for third and long. I just want that. I want something to take the decision-making weight off my shoulders just a little bit. Yeah. And like plus I want to make it better. Cause I, right now I'm probably 50% of the time, I'm not choosing those things that would most effectively portray whatever the scene is calling for.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of that is being self-critical, but I dig what you're saying. Like, let's have a trapper keeper with color coded, like, shit on the side. I forget what they're called, but you know, like tabs.
I mean, tabs.
It's a talking head scene. So let me flip to my talking head section and remind myself real quick, what's an easy, quick way to make this scene work.
Yeah. All of these songs that people love, they're all being written by focus groups books and all of these TV shows. You know, all the writer's room is following the story circle or triangle or whatever fucking shape they use. You know, there are rules and processes for everything.
And right.
I think you should have it in whatever you're doing. You're not going to go out and build a piece of furniture without a set of plans, you know? So
I agree. Yeah.
I want more structure in my comic book creation experience.
Yeah, speaking of building and speaking of structure, the last one here was tools. Something such as an instrument or apparatus used in performing an operation or necessary in the practice of a vocation or profession / a means to an end. So tools, the world's changing. Making production art for storytelling purposes has drastically changed. And like you and I started with one set of tools and now we work on a whole nother set of tools. And that's
sure.
The people starting comics now are probably only going to be using digital tools. And so it's like we're at the vanguard, if you will, of a new horizon. And I think
it's probably like that for every generation of professionals.
I don't know, for like 100 years, for like 100 years, everyone used photos for reference.
And yeah, I guess so. I don't know. Number seven. Yeah, when I was in school, I was learning how to paste stuff up for photographic reproduction. Yeah,
the first reference website I used to pull ref from when I was in art school in 2001 was called Morgue File, and I never understood that name, but that's because that's the name artists had for their magazines that they would keep in their office. It was their Morgue File. But I mean, nowadays, you know, you have all your drawing tools, you have all your digital tools, all your 3D tools. And I think tools are a great advantage, but just like if you get lazy on your skills, if you're lazy on your tools, they can also be a crutch. And some people just use these instead of doing the work. Like we've seen pages where people just drop in SketchUp models, or they'll just drop in a photograph that they used a threshold tool on to get rid of the, you know, sure, to focus just on the solid blacks, right? Without inking it or tweaking it in any way. And that's something great that you can do. But I think my personal philosophy is I'll trace shit straight up, but I'll ink it in a way, or I'll distort it in a way. Like when I was doing Adventure Van, I think I've talked about this on the show, but when I was doing Adventure Van, I had a model of the van, because who the fuck wants to draw a fucking van freehand in every panel? But I would put the warp tool on it. So sometimes I would make the front of the van more exaggerated, or I'd make the tires pop out a little more than they would normally do and stuff like that. So use the warp tool on the SketchUp model that I pasted in, and then I would ink that. And I think that 99% of the people reading that comic would never know that it was a model. And then I would also do little things like I would not ink in like taillights on some of the panels. So it almost seems like I forgot to draw those in, you know, because I was lazy, you know, maybe because I was lazy, I didn't want to. I wouldn't fully ink the rims on every panel. So like my example of guys who use tools best to their advantages and to maximum effect is someone like Jorge Jimenez. He uses his digital tools to enhance, you know, his style, which is great, and his technique, which is rock solid. Right. Or a guy like Brandon Peterson, who uses modeling, a lot of 3D modeling and digital tools as part of his work, but he also was drawing comics before. It's okay. He was also drawing comics before 3D tools were common. So he knows how to draw comics. He was drawing comics on pen and paper, and now he just uses his 3D tools to get to the same end look that he wanted in the first place.
Right.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think when people first started using them, or when SketchUp first coming in, so many people were like, it's cheating. But like, fuck, man, Kirby traced shit. Kirby did photo collage on his pages. Everyone's been doing this since the second photographs and printed artwork were a thing, people have been doing that.
No, I agree. It goes in the work smarter, not harder box.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. As someone who also, you know, I can't speak for you. Maybe you draw everything freehand, but it sticks out like a sore thumb to me when I see obviously an uninked SketchUp model or one that is inked so precisely that it that there's a disconnect between the figure work and the model work. And I think it's important that you can't have that. And I've seen progress pages that Sean Phillips has posted, and you can see the photo, you can see the blue line photo behind his inks or on his board, you know, like you and I have both sold original art with like blue line photos printed on it and we just ink over it. Like, but the thing is, it has to stay consistent with your style. You have to ink, you have to use the tool of the photo or the tool of the reference, but the final product has to be consistent. And I get immediately, just like bad CGI in a movie or something like that, I immediately get taken out of the story. If I'm like, if every building has every brick and every rivet on it, I'm like, oh, that was a model. And everything's too straight. Everything's too, just too perfect in a comic.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. Yeah, I agree. There's you talked about crutches earlier. I think that falls into the same sort of category. There was a time where I was taking reference photos for like every figure. I don't know why, but thinking back on it now, I have the feeling of just like losing confidence in being able to do it myself.
So right.
I would get stressed out, like if I had to draw anything from my brain. And I don't recall consciously thinking I should kick that or how I did, but yeah,
well,
it's yeah.
Anyway. I colored a panel today, and no spoiler alerts. I colored a panel today where I thought, oh, Scott shot reference for this panel. Like, this looks like Scott. Everything is so on point. Everything's so on point. No?
No.
But you know what? You know which panel I'm talking about, though?
I'm guessing.
Yeah. It just looks so, the suit leg looks so good. The boots look so good. I just thought, you know, he's got to be using a personal reference on this. But you're saying you didn't. So obviously you're just that talented.
Well, it wasn't photo reference.
Well, the face in that panel looks just like you too. So I was like,
Oh, that's what happens.
So yeah, then that just goes to show that how good of an artist you are. Cause I thought you traced a photo of yourself.
Magic poser.
Yeah. Magic poser is great. I love it so much. Yeah. Let's quickly rattle off. I use Magic Poser.
Uh-huh.
I use SketchUp. I use Photoshop. Those are the three programs I use as part of my toolbox. And I use all the Kyle brushes that I can get my hands on in Photoshop. So, and that can be overwhelming if you're just getting into Photoshop and you download the entire brush library from Adobe. If you download every single pack, you're downloading probably close to 1,000 brushes, which I think can be super overwhelming. So I have like my personal like ink box brush set, and then everything else is below that. And I rarely go below, you know, the 10 or 15 that I use on a regular basis.
Right.
But what tools are you currently using?
Again, context is everything. So if I need to do a specific thing, I'll use that specific thing. But just in like straight up figure work or background stuff, I probably have 3-4 most that I bounce back and forth between. Yeah. I just in Clip Studio, I just created my own sort of subtool set or whatever, where I put all the shit that I use all the time.
Right.
So I don't have to keep searching around for it. Right. I just figured that out.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
This morning, my dumbass finally started labeling my layers with what brush I was using for that effect.
Oh.
Because when I have to go back and do that effect 5 pages later, I don't remember where to find that brush or where it is. So I'm an idiot. But yeah, so I guess to wrap up this discussion, I have some notes like that. Some guys, you know, some guys lean more on stuff than others. Like I think Greg Land uses technique and tools more than style. Like his style is using tools and his inking technique or
sure
his reference technique or whatever. Then like James Herron or Mike Mignola, they'll use style and technique and use basic tools, pencil, ink, a brush, and then maybe some Zip-A-Tone. You know, I can't imagine those guys are leaning heavily on 3D reference, you know, or on Magic Poser or on like a 3D character poser or SketchUp. Those guys are just, it's all in their head.
I guess as far as reference goes with using Magic Poser or SketchUp or tracing a photo or whatever, it's kind of like getting directions to go somewhere like the first time. Once I drive there, I don't need the directions again. I got it. I know how to get back there for forever. I can find my way again.
Right.
So it's kind of like the same thing. Once you trace that, or not even trace, once you use that figure for Magic Poser, you're like, oh, okay. I get it now. I understand how this leads to this leads to this, and I can build that again.
Yeah. And as you do more and more, as you produce more and more, you probably need those crutches less and less. Unless you're like me and you're just like, I don't know how to draw a street lamp.
Sure.
I don't know how to draw anything.
Yeah. You build up that inventory in your brain of,
right.
Okay. This is how a hand looks like doing this at this angle. And then it's just in there and then you just do it again.
Yeah. It's funny how like, the rando shit I'll pull reference on, and not necessarily, you know, I can look at reference and then use that to draw. I don't always trace what reference I'm using, but like even simple things like, oh, what does a bar shelf look like? You know, I spend a lot of time in bars and I have to pull reference for what it looks like to draw a bar. Like not every bottle is the same. Like my first thought is every bottle is rectangular with like a, you know, a long neck, but that's not true at all. And then the page ends up looking like shit. Like, so, children's out there, feel free to pull up reference for everything.
For bars.
For bars, syringes. Bars,
kids.
Yeah. Little baggies with powder in them, whatever you need reference for, there's reference out there. And there's no shame in having 15 windows up full of photo reference and checking on it, because you're going to suffer if you don't have reference. Even if you cartoon the shit out of it and ink the shit out of it, you still got to have the basic shape of what something's supposed to look like.
Yeah. Your eye can tell pretty quickly when something is wrong. And
yeah,
it doesn't mean you got to draw the thing to look real, but everything about illustration is just approximating and convincing the viewer that this thing is the thing that it is.
Yes. Yeah. It's all about instant. Like, again, I feel like I just say the same shit, but I assume not everyone has listened to all 270 something episodes, but it's like, when kids are going to kindergarten or in preschool, they're not really learning how to read the word bike. They're learning that those shapes mean the word bike. So you learn sight reading, sight words, you learn by looking at the word, and the whole shape together forms that word. You're not actually sounding out every single fucking word. It's the same thing in comics. Like, it has to look kind of like a bicycle, and then people will understand that it's a bicycle, whether you put all the fucking brake wires in the right place or the right amount of spokes on it or any of that bullshit. You have to be able to approximate what something's supposed to look like. And to do that, you have to know what it's supposed to look like. Lecture over. Any final thoughts before we get into our recommendation section, our recs and effects?
I haven't really consumed anything that I would go out of my way to say, oh, you should. Or I should say, I wouldn't recommend you go out of your way to consume the same thing.
All right. I have a couple of basic recs. One is Kansas in general, Wichita. Yeah, Wichita, Lawrence in particular, and Kansas City, Missouri in particular. We were sitting there on one of the days of the show and getting ready to leave. So we go into Kansas City. The show I was at last weekend was about 20 miles outside of Kansas City. And so I had my friend from high school that lives in Albuquerque. He went out there with me. So even though the show itself wasn't the best show I've ever had monetarily, treating it like a little vacation with one of my best friends was fun. And so just one day, Kevin Mellon and Dennis Hopeless were walking by. Dennis Hallam, Dennis Hopeless. They were walking by the table and we were shooting the shit. And I just said, oh, what's a good dive bar in Kansas City? And they're like, well, what kind of dive bar? And I was like, Old Milwaukee Dive Bar. And they both said the same bar, this place called Lucky Boys, immediately. So I wrote down Lucky Boys. Kevin recommended a place called The Campground to go to dinner first. They're in the same neighborhood, or actually right across, right next to each other. And just spectacular places both. I mean, Lucky Boys is one of the best dive bars I've ever been to. Campground is where I had Wild Turkey 101 rye, which I didn't even know Wild Turkey 101 made a rye, but I saw it on the shelf and I ordered it. And it might be the smoothest bourbon I've ever had. And I've never really spent much time on rye before, but it's fantastic. $26.49 at Total Wine, picking up a bottle the first chance I get. But also Wichita, I went to a bar called Kirby's for viewer. I got my Kirby's shirt on. In Wichita, and it might be a top three bar I've ever been to in my life. I can't quite put into words why it's so good, but I loved it to death. And the 225 Old Milwaukee's didn't hurt. Although if you extrapolate that, you would have paid $15 for a six pack of Old Milwaukee. I get it, but it's fucking great. It's lovely. So I recommend all that. And I also recommend bars have $15 t-shirts because I have a Kirby's bar shirt and I have a bar from a place in Lindsborg, Kansas, America's little Sweden, if you will, called Old Stuga.
Everybody knows that.
So we went to Old Stuga and drank Hawaiian beer. We drank Maui Brewing Company beer in Old Stuga because there was no Swedish beer on tap, which was weird. But $15 shirts. So shout out to bars who know how to market to me. And there's lots of them in the Midwest. So I recommend a Kansas road trip. Me and you, Planet Comic Con in March.
Planet Comic Con?
Yep. It only takes 6 days. You only got to tell your family, I'll be back in 6 days, road tripping out there. It'd be great. Yeah. I'll use your name to get the comp table and hotel.
Go ahead.
Yes. So that's it. My recs are just take more road trips, enjoy life. But I do have to dry out. I realize I'm drinking for the show, but I'm getting off the beer for a while, man. I am swollen like a tick. I drank so much goddamn hams in Old Milwaukee. Ugh. Ugh. I feel like a roast that probably could use a little less, like a too juicy of a roast, you know? Like, let's go ahead and dehydrate that shit, make some jerky out of it. That's where I'm at right now. I mean, look at my face. It's practically a fucking circle. It's been a rough week for me and my liver.
You look good.
Oh, thank you very much. All right. Any final notes before we wrap this up and I do a shitload of editing?
Nope.
All right, man. We'll talk to you next week, maybe 2 weeks. Who the fuck knows anymore? But let's shoot for next week.
We'll see.
Who knows?
Yeah. Goodbye.
It's an adventure every week on your podcast app, wherever you choose to listen to us. Is there a new episode going to pop up or not? Who the fuck knows?
The episode isn't the adventure. It's just
whether it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? Listeners, do me a favor. Download it, whether you're going to listen to it or not.
There you go.
Yeah. Make it seem like people are listening to us.
Yeah.
All right. I'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.